Hi, I'm Linda Calabresi. I'm a GP and the medical editor of HealthEd. Welcome to our unique podcast series, now available direct to your device. The series features some of Australia's leading clinical experts talking on topics that are both practical and important to Australian GPs.
Dear colleagues, I'm Frank Varda. My statement, I want to pay respect to the original owners of the land. I received no personal fees or honoraria, and I'm grateful to a large number of people, and I'll have an acknowledgement at the end. Most of what I say is referenced in our book, written by Mervyn Eady and myself, called Anti-Epileptic Drugs in Pregnancy, produced by Adispress. And I want to talk about epilepsy, which is a major topic, and pregnancy, and the combination is a huge topic. But epilepsy is a serious condition with its acknowledged mortality, the dangers of status epilepticus, which is continuous seizures over a period, SUDEP, sudden unexplained death in epilepsy. There are limitations, and it has effects on lifestyle. There are driving restrictions, the problems with therapy and its complications, medical care, which involves not only medication, but also a number of other measures, avoiding precipitants, and then, of course, prognosis and pregnancy-related issues provide another major avenue for discussion, particularly the teratogenicity of the anti-epileptic drugs, which can be physical, such as an absent limb or a bony problem or spina bifida, and neurocognitive problems, which involve both intellectual problems, IQ lowering, and emotional problems. And of course, we all need to combine our efforts to counter the stigma associated with epilepsy. The diagnosis is essentially based on the history. The clinical signs appear only in a minority of patients, and it's the content of the seizure which is very important. We need a witness, a bystander, or we need monitoring, which can be home monitoring or an inpatient EEG video-linked monitoring. And it's very important to take a full family history, take regard of the age of the patient, because some of the types of epilepsy, the so-called epilepsy syndromes, are also age-related. Take note of the gender, which is particularly important in relation to therapy and reproduction. The essential steps is whether to treat the first seizure. Well, we'll need to diagnose it. We need to exclude the differentials. We need to have an EEG. We have imaging of the brain of various sorts. We need some other advanced diagnostic tests, monitoring. We need to look for evidence of comorbidities. And then we have to make a decision on therapy, whether we give medications, which medications we give, whether we give diet, refer the patient to possible surgery after the medications have failed, or even earlier, and vagus nerve stimulation and other measures. The cardinal principles of therapy with medical drugs, that it should be based on the individual characteristics of the patient you treat and the skill of the prescriber. The choice of the medication depends on the epilepsy syndrome, which is the type of syndrome defined on the basis of clinical presentation, age, type of seizure, and the concomitant presentation of intellectual disability, the duration of seizures, whether it's self-limiting, whether it's likely to progress, or whether it's treatable, as in the case of focal epilepsies, where it could be due to a tumor, a malformation, a vascular problem, an aneurysm, a cyst, residual infection, and a number of other things. But basically, epilepsy is divided into generalized epilepsy and focal epilepsy, which are self-explanatory in the sense that generalized epilepsy is a general involvement of the whole brain, whereas focal epilepsy may start producing seizures in a focal area like one of the portions of the cerebral hemisphere. It could be frontal, temporal, parietal, occipital, with each of its characteristics. Certain drugs are contraindicated in selected patients, particularly if comorbidities exist, which preclude the use of a particular anti-epileptic drug. That should obviously be avoided. Postmenopausal people may need to be treated differently. ethnic groups may respond adversely to certain medications, and the classical example is the use of carbamazepine in Chinese populations who may develop potentially fatal skin rashes, Steven Johnson's type syndrome, and exfoliative dermatitis on medications. And also, most importantly, valproate, which is the most effective drug for generalized epilepsy, must be carefully considered and probably excluded as first-line drug for women of childbearing age. The cardinal principles are that the drug should suit the patient. It depends on the syndrome, the generalized or focal, as I mentioned, and certain drugs are contraindicated. Introducing medication involves a careful discussion with the patient where all aspects of therapy should be discussed. The advice about cost and the benefit, the need for treatment, the hazards of declining medication, whether status epilepticus may happen and is potentially fatal and should be prevented, SUDEP and what we know about it, which is in fact an increasing body of knowledge, recently or a little while ago written by, described in a book written by Rosie Pennelly, who passed away, unfortunately, but SUDEP is a very important topic. The importance of compliance, of taking medications as prescribed in the appropriate dose at the appropriate time, either in mono or in polytherapy, reporting adverse effects to the doctor, and to avoid treating oneself. Do not self-manage, because that's likely to come to harm, and the doctor may not find out about it until such time that the unpleasant potential side effects emerge, or there may be complications of the epilepsy which need to be weighed up. Steps in introducing medication, the cardinal principle is start low and go slow. Low doses, observe the benefit. If tolerated, slowly increase and observe. You should not start prescribing the recommended total daily dose as it appears in journals such as MIMS or any of the promotional literature by the companies. Do not start with the full dose, because if you do, you may encounter adverse side effects and may put the patient off, and they may never take that medication again. Change if intolerable adverse effects occur. Add a second drug if the side effects of the first drug indicate that the second drug is needed, and that the ceiling dose, a dose above which you cannot go because the patient cannot tolerate it, has been reached. And this is very important. I learned this from Professor Martin Brody of Glasgow. Early beneficial effects of a new drug being introduced indicate that we're on the right drug. The seizures either stop or markedly reduced, and at that point, the dose could be gently increased. Comorbidities are very common, and they can be comorbidities related to other illnesses, or they could be psychiatric comorbidities, which is the topic most frequently discussed. We need to identify these comorbidities, see if they are treatment-related, seizure-related, or unrelated, or interictal. May have other causes, such as an encephalitis. And these psychiatric comorbidities are commonly depression, but also anxiety, and psychosis of various sorts, such as being paranoid, or hostile, or aggressive. And we should involve very early on the services of psychologists and psychiatrists, and ideally patients should be formally assessed with a form of neurological depression inventory, one form of which advocated by Professor Marco Muller recently, and this particular inventory, NDDI, is very highly sensitive and specific for epilepsy. We ought to take account and explain to patients about seizure precipitants. This is not an all-embracing list, but these are the important ones. Non-compliance, alcohol, visual stimuli in a photosensitive person with generalized epilepsy, sleep deprivation, stress, intercurrent illness, issues of hydration, individual triggers, such as certain musical items or the loss of your favorite football team in the grand final. These are individually related to certain patients. And hypoglycemia, a very important and often neglected precipitant. And now we come to pregnancy and epilepsy. Women of childbearing age are a very special and the most important group. Attention must be paid well before the conception, as 30% of pregnancies are unplanned. This is not always possible to do, but we should advise on contraception, planning a pregnancy, and provide the best treatment even before pregnancy, not to be forced to change when conception had occurred. And I'll repeat that sentence. The best treatment should be applied even before pregnancy, not to be forced to change when conception had occurred. And this applies particularly to valproate. Women of childbearing age should not be prescribed valproate as a first-line drug even before they plan to become pregnant, because then we would have to change the prescribed medication. A strong correlation exists between freedom from seizures in the pre-pregnancy months or year and the seizure-free total pregnancy. It emphasizes the importance of achieving sustained seizure control prior to pregnancy. And it also raises the possibility that pre-pregnancy seizure control may carry over into pregnancy for an uncertain and perhaps variable period of time. So if the woman managed to deliver a baby with a normal pregnancy, a normal delivery, that augurs well for the future. As McCrory, in a relatively recent article, had commented on the restrictions of valproate, which I will talk about in a moment, indicates that although the goal of the recommendations by the European Commission and the Commission in Great Britain recommends to avoid birth defects in potential babies, and this attempt is laudable, the strict recommendations as currently written fail to account for another equally important ethical component of the discussion process: the woman's interests to preserve her health and her very strong preference potentially to begin valproate immediately to avoid potential fatal seizures by using the most effective drug for generalized idiopathic epilepsy. And there is little doubt that this is the case, that valproate is the most effective drug for generalized idiopathic epilepsy, as shown by any number of studies, most importantly by the SANAT study performed in a comparison of sodium valproate and a number of other alternatives. The Australian Pregnancy Register and registers in general, from whom most of the information about pregnancy and epilepsy are gained, was established in 1989. It's affiliated with the European Register, which comprises over 40 countries. It has ethics approval, informed written consent. Participation is voluntary. The study is observational, not treating any patients. It's left to their doctor. It's a prospective study with telephone interviews at enrollment each term after delivery and 12 months later. And the interview encompasses all medical, epilepsy, social, occupational, and family histories. The register enrolls patients prospectively, and this is important, and we enroll women with epilepsy on treatment, people with epilepsy not on treatment, and also women using anti-seizure medications for other purposes, such as bipolar disease or pain, a classical example being Lyrica. Now, this is important because we enroll patients who have had epilepsy and are untreated, and this provides an important control group, and none of the other registers can claim to do that. They use low-dose lamotrigine as a comparator. The outcomes of pregnancy are shown on the slide in proportion. The vast majority produce a normal baby in over 90%, and the small categories of the other groups are shown there. And the more recent breakdown shows that we have total enrollments, various outcomes, and importantly, we have very, very few people lost to follow-up. And out of over 3,000 patients, to lose only 48 over a period of 24 years is a remarkable tribute to my coordinators. But we have about over 3,000 enrolled women. UREP has about 40,000, but many of them are not eligible for evaluation because they report too late or they don't fulfill the protocol. But we are very strict, and we only employ women who prospectively enrolled or just in the first trimester, and therefore the information is observation and very valuable, because you cannot complete a clinical trial on women who are pregnant, and therefore the register as an observational study provides the evidence. The other evidence about outcomes in pregnancy come from national databases, particularly the Scandinavian one, which produced a lot of information, but prospective studies are probably more reliable and more valuable. Prescribing women of childbearing age and even younger for generalized epilepsy, we mustn't use valproate as first line. And lamotrigine is probably recommended. The Australian authority number, it's an authority drug, is given there. Levetiracetam, amzonizamide with authority numbers listed. With focal epilepsy, a very large number of medications are available, including levetiracetam, lacosamide, zonisamide, or any of the traditional drugs, such as phenytoin, the barbiturates, carbamazepine, but they are all teratogenic to some degree. And for focal epilepsy, again, we would like to use the safest drugs, which are essentially levetiracetam, lacosamide, and possibly zonisamide, even though recent studies, which we've just published about a week ago on zonisamide, indicate that zonisamide is not entirely free of teratogenicity. In any case, all anti-seizure medications are teratogenic in high doses, and topiramate in the recent findings indicates that it's probably more teratogenic than some of the others, particularly in polytherapy, but not so much in monotherapy. But nonetheless, topiramate is also to be avoided as first-line therapy. Pregnancy planning should involve obstetrical care wherever possible, involve an obstetrician, and we need the appropriate obstetrical tests at which they are more proficient in advising than we are. And as I say, we don't treat, but we refer frequently to the obstetricians and take note of their suggestions. We also suggest normal delivery rather than cesarean delivery, because after examining our database, we found that the delivery by cesarean section had been decided in the early months of the pregnancy, possibly as a matter of convenience for the obstetricians, rather than for medical indications. We prefer women on anti-seizure medications for epilepsy to have a normal delivery if possible. But we also advise to prepare a clonazepam drip for the delivery in case seizures were to occur at the time of delivery. I mentioned here the interactions of estrogens and anti-seizure medications. This occurs in two ways, two directions. The enzyme-inducing anti-seizure medications, such as barbiturates, phenytoin, and carbamazepine, induce a rapid elimination of the estrogen in the oral contraceptives. Hence, we need to use the higher steroid dose containing oral contraceptives for women on these enzyme-inducing drugs. In a reverse way, lamotrigine and levetiracetam, which are now the frontline drugs, first line for the treatment of epilepsy in pregnancy, their levels are reduced in the presence of steroids, such as oral contraceptives before pregnancy and in pregnancy, requiring the adjustment of the doses of these drugs. So when they talk about the interactions, you've got to ask, does it affect the oral contraceptive or does it affect the drug? This is one of our papers drawing attention to the fact that from the Australian Pregnancy Register, women taking anti-epileptic drugs are likely to suffer adverse effects, including teratogenic malformations, and valproate is at a high risk. Sodium valproate, just a brief history, originally discovered in 1912 to be more efficient, the solvent for barbiturates, discovered in France, multiple mechanisms of action, and is a drug which, as an additional benefit, causes no seizure aggravation and no new seizure type. And in this regard, it's probably unique amongst the anti-seizure medications. Its mechanism parallels that of lithium, which is the other mainline drug in bipolar disease, and I won't dwell on this slide, but it indicates that these drugs have a very similar action at a subcellular level, and it may explain why they're both so effective in bipolar disease. The UK restrictions have been strengthened in January of this year, and it now states that valproate mustn't be started in new patients younger than 55 years old, unless two specialists independently consider and document that there is no effective or tolerated treatment or compelling reasons for the reproductive risks do not apply. And for the majority of patients, other effective treatment options are available. Now, this is actually restricting the use of us as colleagues to apply individual treatment to patient management, and is not thought out by the experts, but largely dictated by politicians and bureaucrats. This is far too strong, and it has been strengthened now, including males above 55 and in new patients, male or female. The restrictions are not as severe in Europe, and people who really know about how to use valproate, that's the European Academy of Neurology and the International Pregnancy Register, people were not consulted on this restriction process, and they have protested. And they have issued a statement which is far more in line with what we endorse, that wherever possible, valproate should be avoided in women of childbearing potential, but the treatment of choice should be based on a shared decision between the clinician and the patient. So in other words, there is some latitude in allowing the doctor to make an informed decision and treat the patient as an individual. And it states that for seizures, valproate is the most effective treatment for generalized epilepsy, and the risks and benefits should be discussed. And where there is the most effective treatment, it should be prescribed, and that includes the number of syndromes which is mentioned, and it may be offered as first-line treatment in situations when pregnancy is highly unlikely, such as significant or intellectual physical disability in patients who are unlikely to be childbearing, and this also applies to males, and therefore it should not be prescribed as first-line drug in women of childbearing age, but otherwise we treat the patients as we think fit. This is a summary of what I've said, mentioning the rate of increase of medications, valproate being the most teratogenic, lamotrigine is the least teratogenic, and mentioning the specific side effects which seem to be associated with each drug individually. Valproate is capable of causing neural defects, as well as cardiac and skeletal defects. Carbamazepine predominantly cardiovascular, but may produce other defects as well, septal defects, fellows. Topiramate produces renal defects, and lamotrigine in high doses produces hair, lip, and cleft palate. Now, topiramate's teratogenicity has been uncovered only a few years ago, and it's in polytherapy, but as a first-line therapy, it is not appropriate to use in women of childbearing age. Again, this is from our papers, reducing the valproate dosage and fetal malformation, the cutoff limit above which this occurrence of these adverse effects become intolerable, and originally we reported on 1,400. We developed further bigger database. The ceiling was reduced to 1,100, and the European Registrar in 2011 in the Lancet published a paper on a very much larger database suggesting 600 milligrams be the level above which one shouldn't go. But currently, certainly in our practice, we are unlikely to use doses of valproate in women of childbearing age over about 300 or 400 milligrams a day, but potentially supplemented by a low-dose lamotrigine. This indicates the way the anti-seizure medications prescribing has developed over the years. We have seen valproate strangely increasing because of its use in the psychiatric field, but reduced significantly in pregnancy, and lamotrigine increasing markedly. With the other drugs, we also note that there is an increase in pregnancy of levetiracetam and topiramate. This was at the time before the teratogenicity of topiramate was discovered. And we note that there is a parallel reduction of the earlier enzyme-inducing drugs, carbamazepine and phenytoin, both of which have declined over the years, whether in polytherapy or monotherapy, because of their side effects, their teratogenicity, and their enzyme-inducing property affecting the other anti-epileptic drugs. The valproate dose effect also relates to the lowering of the IQ and in general to neurocognitive side effects. And this was espoused by a pioneering work of Medor and his colleagues, as well as Bromley in Britain. So in addition to the physical defects, cognitive development of the fetus may be affected by anti-epileptic drugs, particularly by valproic acid. Again, those related, and we have managed to confirm that in Australia in the group led by Dr. Wood and Dr. Nadebaum, indicating a dosage effect on cognition of sodium valproate in the Australian cohort. This is a cover of a New England Journal of Medicine, a paper on cognitive issues pioneered by Medor, showing on the right panel the major fall in IQ at the age of 3 in fetus subjected in utero to the exposure to valproate compared to all the other anti-epileptic drugs who don't appear to be causing significant damage. But valproate in all doses is associated with a major drop in IQ. This was later reviewed again, and the dose relationship, the dose effect relationship was clarified. And this effect also occurs much more frequently in high doses than in the low doses we had already discussed. The Australian position is that the pharmaceutical benefit scheme restrictions on anti-epileptic or anti-seizure drug prescribing promotes an unsafe and outdated practice. And Terry O'Brien and Christian Gerecki have written an article in the Medical Journal of Australia quoted there, referring to restrictions. It defines the problem and it urges a more balanced view, safety for both mother and child. No seizures, no malformations. But we are not given a draconian edict to get two specialists to testify that the patient cannot have sodium valproate when it's quite clear that the patient is not in the vulnerable group, or the patient is a male, or the patient cannot tolerate other drugs, or all other drugs are ineffective. And I think this article probably shaped the improvement in the TGA and ADEC recommendations to permit levetiracetam, Keppra, and lamotrigine, Lamictal, to be prescribed first line in women of childbearing age, even though they are authority drugs, as I've shown earlier. So the treatment options, to reiterate again, for focal epilepsy, any of the other drugs are available. And these include levetiracetam, which is also used in generalized epilepsy to replace valproate, zonisamide, which has some evidence of teratogenicity, lacosamide, on which we have as yet a smallish database, lamotrigine, and this is the best option for generalized epilepsy. Very briefly, lamotrigine is the best drug used as a comparator. It may produce a fatal exfoliative rash if rapidly introduced, more likely on the presence of valproate, but it is synergistic. So if it doesn't appear to work when it has been introduced and reached a reasonable dose, a very small amount of valproate may enhance its action, and the two are synergistic, as published by Kwon and Brody in 1998. Levetiracetam is favored for treating focal epilepsy. Excellent drug, safe, effective, less effective than valproate in generalized epilepsy. First-line drug in many women of epilepsy of childbearing age. The psychiatric comorbidities may exist to supervene, particularly depression, and I find that it is effective in lower doses than commonly prescribed. One need not start at 1,000 and go to 2,000 or 3,000 milligrams per day, but starting in 250 milligrams twice a day appears to be very effective in many patients, and 1,000 or 1,500 total dose per day is usually effective in my experience. The use of folic acid, there's been a lot of noise about this, and it's not proven too effective in preventing fetal malformations, but it's thought to be possibly important in reducing cognitive disturbances, such as those involving language, memory, or executive function. And some controversy exists about its possible ill effects, so the doses should be limited, and not more than 0.5 gram per day is recommended at present. This is from our paper showing that reducing and eliminating valproate is a two-edged weapon. The malformations from a UREP paper were reduced by half. On the other hand, the seizures increased by 30%. Thompson, talking about the withdrawal of valproate, if valproate was continued, 16% had seizures. If it was replaced, 29% have seizures. And if it was totally withdrawn, 33%. So we have to take into account the two sides of the coin. We are treating the mother as well as the baby. Lactation is generally safe and recommended. Exceptions perhaps apply to benzodiazepine and phenobarbital taken by the mother. And the maternal benefits of fetal bonding, hydration, immunoglobulins, protein are all advantages which outweigh any risks. I would like to acknowledge our principal sponsor, Epilepsy Action Australia. I would like to ask you to take a photo of this so that you can refer pregnant women to the Australian Pregnancy Register so that we could continue our research. And finally, I wish to acknowledge in detail all my professional and lay colleagues for referring patients, to thank the Scientific Advisory Board and the Ethical Research Committee of the Royal Melbourne, assuming the oversight. And over the years, the ESA, the Royal Melbourne Neuroscience Foundation, Epilepsy Action Australia, NHMRC, and UCB Pharma, Sanofi of Endis, ESA, and others have provided financial support towards the maintenance of the Australian Pregnancy Register. I also wish to extend my thanks to colleagues at UREP, with whom our register has been affiliated for 24 years. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you are enjoying this series and will recommend it to your friends and colleagues. I'm Linda Calabresi, and on behalf of the team here at HealthEd, I look forward to joining you soon for our next podcast. If you enjoyed this audio segment, you can find out more about our free webcast lectures, which can be accessed from any device on our website at healthed.com.au.
The podcasts published on this page are for medical professionals only. The content is not a substitute for medical advice. If you have a health issue, you should seek the advice of a suitable qualified health professional.